Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on aspartame update when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, which was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. These benefits are things like rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush, when he was president, said that what Americans want is jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, or Ben Franklin, or Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognize that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. It's not in public business, and it's certainly not in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's why I contend that it's time that you cashed in on your inheritance and learned how to collect those benefits of the Old Covenant contract and to collect those benefits in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. That's real property. Instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and more worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how to do just that, why don't you call for information on our CD Home School for Adults and order our free General Law CD package at the same time. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and best of all, it's free. Now, you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right off of our website. All right, talking about aspartame, let me give you a couple of reminders here that aspartame is found in thousands of products. Thousands. So if you think that you've been watching the labels and you're not ingesting any of this aspartame, I think that you need to pay attention here. Because aspartame is found in thousands of products like sodas, chewing gum, dairy products, and even many medicines. NutraSweet and Equal are popular brands. Aspartame is consumed by over 200 million people around the world and is found in more than 6,000 products. I underline the 6,000 products. Aspartame is found in Equal, Diet Coke, Diet Pepsi, Diet Snapple, Sugar-Free Kool-Aid, Breyers Light, General Foods, Sugar-Free International Coffees, among other foods. Aspartame, developed by the G.D. Searle Company, is used in more than 6,000 food products worldwide. Marisant Company is another leading aspartame company with the brands Equal, Canderel, and NutraSweet. Aspartame was first approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration back in 1981. All right, so 6,000 products out there on your grocer's shelves. And most of the time, this stuff is never brought to your attention and it's not put on the label. You see, if a product is used in a end product, then the aspartame that's in the product that's put into the cookies, which is the end product, all I have to do is label whatever that is, and it may contain aspartame, but they don't have to label the aspartame. Now, there's six products that are called artificial sweeteners, like cyclamates, which were banned here in the United States, but they're not banned in other countries around the world. So when you buy a bag of cookies there or chocolate that maybe is made in Belgium or the Netherlands or Denmark, and you buy this imported product, it may contain aspartame or cyclamates or some other artificial sweetener that you don't know anything about. So you're getting some of it, and as we progress along, I'll show you what you need to do to get rid of it. If you've got this in your body, you can get it out. And if you're suffering from one of the 92 side effects that come from it, we can identify those side effects. We can avoid as much aspartame as possible, and then we can use activated charcoal to get the balance of it out of our system. Of course, number one is let's keep it out, if it's at all possible. But if you can't keep it out, then you need to have a modality for getting it out. That's the bottom line. Now, let me give you another couple of statistics here. Listen to this. By far, the leading high-intensity sweetener in the world is saccharin. And it's also the oldest high-intensity sweetener commercially available since the turn of the century. Saccharin accounts for roughly 5.3 million tons, sugar sweetness equivalent, or 71% of the global high-intensity sweetener market. Now, there are four reasons for saccharin's continued strong market share. Price. 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 Saccharin is by far the least expensive high-intensity sweetener at about 1 cent per pound. Why is it that Kraft and medicine and pharmaceuticals and etc. want to use artificial sweetener? It's very simple. It's money. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, the soda pop industry here in the United States is a $54 billion a year industry. One of the ingredients that goes into every can of soda pop is sugar. We got to sweeten the stuff somehow. And if the company, Coca-Cola or Pepsi or whoever is making the product, you know, these are business people. These are people, you know, that have been to Harvard and Yale, and they've got MBAs. And when they're running these companies, it's a very simple equation. Sugar costs 45 cents a pound, and artificial sweetener costs 1 cent a pound. So now, if you have to sweeten a product, and it costs you 45 cents a pound to sweeten it with sugar, and you can sweeten it for 1 cent a pound by using aspartame or saccharin or cyclamates or something else, what does your common sense tell you to buy? So the companies involved, you know, they don't have any particular malign intent. I'm not suggesting that Coca-Cola is trying to kill everybody. Which in the final analysis doesn't make any sense, because if they killed everybody, then who's going to buy their product? They don't want to kill you. They want to use the least expensive sweetener possible to maximize their profits. Now, when you go in to buy a can of soda pop, and let's just say that it costs 50 cents to buy a Coke. When you buy a Diet Coke, do they charge you 35 cents because they used a chemical sweetener instead of sugar? Do you save any money by buying the Diet Pop? In fact, if anything, you'd probably find that the Diet Pop sells for a premium over the regular pop because it's a diet. And here in America, where we're so fat anyway, we're all sitting over here saying, well, we got to cut down on our calories, and so if I'm going to drink this Coke, I'll drink a Diet Coke so that I don't get fat. I don't take in any calories. Now, what happens is that this Diet Coke is a drug. This aspartame is a drug. In fact, that's what it was created for. When they discovered it, the purpose behind it was for medicine. It was a drug. And then they discovered that it was sweet. And they said, wow, look at this. This drug is sweet. And so it didn't work out as a drug, but it did work out as a sweetener. And so here we've got a drug company, the Searle Drug Company, discovering a drug through research and development, and it turns out that it's real sweet, costs a penny a pound to make, and they go out here and they aggressively market it. And that makes all the sense in the world. Can't blame them. They're sitting there saying, well, look, we got this chemical product. It's real sweet. And we'd like to sell it and make some money off of it. So, you know, the Coca-Cola company and the Searle company, they're just business people, just trying to make a dollar. You can't find anything wrong with that. Now, what if, though, this chemical causes people to have 92 symptoms? That's not so good, is it? And you'd think, well, you know, we'd like to sell this product, but if it's going to harm people, I guess we ought to forget it. Maybe we ought to forget that. But boys and girls, when profits are involved, it's damn hard, you know, really hard. Now listen, I'm going to give you some numbers here. This is going to blow your socks off. There's a company here in the United States called Costco, C-O-S-T-C-O. It's one of these membership kind of stores. You go in, you join, you become a member, and you get these discounts. So, Sam's Club, where we live here in the Midwest, is pretty popular along that line. You go in there and you pay them $35, become a member, and then you can go shop in their warehouse store. And it is cheaper. It's cheaper than their Walmart store. It's cheaper than the average store on the street. And most of these stores have a drug counter in there. Go into a Walmart store and they've got drugs in there. They got a drug store. They got a bank. They got a McDonald's. Now, how much profit is there in these chemicals? In these chemical drugs, in these chemical sweeteners and so on? Well, the profits are pretty dramatic. And Costco has been passing on the savings to their customers from the drug companies. But how much is the markup on these drugs? And so I got a letter here from J. Richard Niemela, N-I-E-M-E-L-A. I think if you were to plug that into your computer, you'd get J. Richard Niemela. And then he puts out an information blog. It's got all kinds of information on it. And this is of interest. In addition to the info below on what drugs cost, here's a link that talks about what we really need to do in this country, which is called prevention. Costco, unbelievable. Make sure you read to the end. You're going to be amazed. So he starts off and he says, let's hear it for Costco. This is just mind-boggling. Make sure you read all the way past the list of drugs. The woman that signed below is a budget analyst out of Washington, D.C. Did you ever wonder how much it costs a drug company for the active ingredient in prescription medications? Some people think it must cost a lot because many drugs sell for more than $2 per tablet. So we did a search of offshore chemical synthesizers that supply the active ingredients found in drugs approved by the Food and Drug Administration. So as we have revealed in past issues of Life Extension, a significant percentage of drugs sold in the United States contain active ingredients that are made in other countries. In our independent investigation of how much profit drug companies really make, we obtained the actual price of active ingredients used in some of the most popular drugs sold in America. So let me give you a couple of three examples here. Let's take a look at Celebrex. You see that advertised on television continuously. Well, the consumer price for 100 tablets is $130.27. Why don't you get a pen and paper out here and write down some of these numbers over here, because this is going to blow your socks off, which is going to tell you the answer to this question of, well, why are these companies using aspartame instead of using sugar? Why are they risking our lives and poisoning us and doing these thingies over here? It's nothing personal. It's just money. That's all. We're just trying to make a buck. So if you get your pen and paper out here, write Celebrex, C-E-L-E-B-R-E-X, 100 milligrams, 100 milligram tablets. The consumer price, that is the recommended retail price, is $130.27. Now, the cost of the general active ingredients that go into Celebrex is 60 cents. So, you write down here Celebrex, and then you write down price, $130.27. Then you write down cost, and that's 60 cents. And then you write down percent of markup, or markup, just use the word markup. And the answer to that is 21,712%. Okay, you got that 21,712% markup. Now let me give you an illustration in normal channels of business. Let's suppose that you're a Chevrolet dealer. And you call up General Motors one day and you say, gee, I'd like to buy some Chevrolet automobiles to sell out of my Chevrolet dealership. And so you order five cars, and these cars, General Motors would say to you, the recommended retail list price on this car is $20,000. So what do you think the price of that car is going to be to you? What do you think General Motors is going to sell this car to you that they suggested retail for $20,000? Well, the answer is 10, one half of that. So General Motors, when you go into your local dealership and you're looking at the amenities that are on the automobile, there'll be a white sheet of paper, you know, pasted in the back window. And then it'll say, dealer suggested retail price down at the bottom, $20,000. Okay, well, it cost General Motors $5,000 to make the car, and they sell it for $10. That's called a keystone markup. Then they sell it to the dealer for 10, and they retail it out for 20. That's a keystone markup. So the bottom line is, if you buy it for a dollar, you sell it for two. That's a 100% markup. 100%. That's a double. Now, that's the standard markup in retail trade. In case you were wondering what the standard markup is. You know, you walk into Sears or Penny's, and you're looking at coats and hats and belts and one thing and another. Whenever you look at the retail price and you want to know what did this merchant pay for this, just cut it in half. That's what he paid for it. Now, there are a lot of items that are out there that have more than a keystone markup in it. Jewelry, for instance, has more than a keystone markup. Now, the word keystone is a buzzword among merchants and businessmen. Well, did you keystone it? No, I've got three marks in it. Okay, well, a mark is another buzzword among merchants and traders and business people. A mark is 100% more than you paid. So if you've got three marks in it, or I made six marks, or that's got about eight marks in it, or that's got 10 marks in it, that means that if you bought it for 100, you sold it for 1,000. Now, I made about 9 marks on that, or I made 10 marks on that. Okay, got that? So we got keystone, and we've got marks. Now, when we take a look here at what is the percent of profit or markup, it's 21,712%. So, if you wanted to know how many marks we've got in this, what we would do is plug into our Texas Instruments EL1197G3 here, $130.27. And then, let's see, 130.27. And then we're going to divide that by 0.60. And they've got 217 marks in it. Can you see that? Cost of 60 cents. Now, out here in the real business world, any business that has a full keystone markup is a business that's just raking money in hand over fist. I mean, we're just making money hand over fist. if you were to take a look at gasoline as an illustration, I get a newsletter in here and it tells me what the wholesale price of gas is. Now, right now, gasoline is selling for over $2 a gallon wholesale. I think it was $2.02, the last newsletter that I got. And it's retailing here for about $2.52, I believe I saw. So it's got a 50 cent markup in it at the dealer level. So the guy here in the gas station who's buying the gasoline for $2.02 is retailing it out for $2.52. So he's making 50 cents a gallon. So if we take 2.52 divided by 0.50, he's only making 20%. 20%. That's a 20% markup. If you take milk in your grocery store, those are called fair trade items. Fair trade items. And they sell in all of the stores. Now, a fair trade item in reality is a monopoly. It's a monopoly in which we have price fixing. The dairy says, well, the price of milk is $3.50 a gallon or $4.50 a gallon, and everybody sells it for that. And everybody buys it for $4 and sells it for $4.50. Fair trade item. Those are popular items that you have to carry in your store because it's expected by all your customers. Every customer expects to go in and find bread, milk, cheese, all kinds of things. Now, if you take certain kinds of cheese, like imported Brie cheese from France, you know, now that's not a fair trade item. So they may be selling that stuff for $6, $8, $10 a pound, and they may be paying $2 or $3 a pound selling it for 10. So they might have, you know, 2, 3, 4 marks on it, and these specialty items, which is kind of where the money's at. So you suck people in with the bread and milk, and then while they're in there, you sell them Brie cheese and imported chocolate from Belgium, which, you know, has 3 or 4 marks on it. All right, now, the most profitable business in the world is farming. Farming, yep, farming. Now, with all the farmers going broke, you know, people, when I tell them that, they look at me and they say, Gordon, you have lost your mind. All right, now get your pen and paper out here, and I'm going to show you that farming. The guy that created farming was God. God created farming. He created the most profitable business that has ever been designed or created. It is just phenomenal. Well, until drugs came along. When drugs came along, boy, that just blew God right out of the water. But let me just give you an illustration here. Let's take a seed of corn, just one corn seed, and plant it. And when that corn grows up and it produces, you'll have 2 ears of corn. And each ear of corn will have 16 rows. And if you were to carefully count all of the kernels of corn, you would average 436 kernels per ear. That's 872 kernels. Now you planted one kernel of corn, you got 872. Now that's 87,200%. Can you follow that? You divide 1 into 872, you get 87,200% markup or profit margin. That's profitable. Now look at this first thing that I showed you in here, 87,200%. That's the profit margin on corn designed by God. Celebrex is 21,712%, 21,000 versus 87,000. So you can see that Celebrex isn't nearly as profitable as corn. All right, let's take a look at another one called Claritin. Claritin. I'm going to show you how we've made profit on drugs here. Claritin, 10 milligrams, consumer price, 100 tablets, is $215.17. So you write down Claritin, C-L-A-R-I-T-I-N. Consumer price, 100 tablets, $215.17. Cost, 71 cents. Cost me 71 cents for the ingredients to put into this. percent of markup, 30,306%. Still below corn, isn't it? Corn, remember, 87,000%. This is 30,000. Well, we're getting up there. We had 21,000 for Celebrex, and now we've got 30,000%. Now, remember, if you're the Chevrolet dealer and you got 100% markup, my God, you're raking money in here hand over fist. Hand over fist. And that's the standard in retail. The standard price is one keystone, one mark. Jewelry has three marks in it. That's the standard in the industry, three marks. All right. Now let's go with Keflex, K-E-F-L-E-X, 250 milligrams. I don't know what it is, but it's K-E-F-L-E-X, Keflex, 100 tablets, $157.39 is the price. Now the cost is $1.88. So the percent of markup is 8,372%. All right, now compared to corn with 87,000%, this has only got 8,000% markup. 8,000%. Isn't that special? All right, Lipitor. Never heard that name, Lipitor. Consumer price, 100 tablets, $272.37. $272.37 is the price. The cost of the active ingredients is $5.80. $5.80 for cost. So the markup is $4,696. Well, now, you know, that's not too shabby. That's not too shabby. I'm going to show you how many marks that is. Let me divide this out here so I can get the marks. The markup is $4,696. So if we take 272 point, whoops, 272.37 cents, and we divide that by $5.80, we get 46.96 marks, or 46.96. So it's got 47 marks in it. 47 marks. Let me give you an illustration as to what that would mean if your Chevrolet dealer had 47 marks in your Chevrolet automobile. He would buy it for $5,000. Okay? And so he would buy the Chevrolet from General Motors for $5,000 times 47. And sell it to you for $235,000. So if automobiles sold with the same markup in it as this particular drug here called Lipitor, your Chevrolet automobile would cost you $235,000. Now you people line up to pick up these drugs, and that's because it's not a big ticket item. See, drugs are a low-end item, and so low-end items usually have a higher markup in it. So if you're looking to buy bubble gum, and when I was a kid, a piece of bubble gum cost one penny. And more than likely, the company that turns those out could make 10 pieces of bubble gum for a penny. And so they would sell one piece for a penny, and so they got 10 marks on it. Probably 5 marks for the manufacturer and 5 marks for the retailer. But the moral of the story is the smaller the ticket item, then the higher the profitability. When you get into big ticket items, like, you know, you're going to buy a Boeing 747, and it costs $100 million, you know, to buy the airplane. Well, it probably cost the Boeing company $50 million to build it, and it could have even cost them $60 or $70 million to build it, but every time they build one, they make $30 million. So every time they sell one, making $30 million profit, see? So as we're looking at markups here, generally speaking, when you got something that costs you $272, you're going to have a you're going to have a greater markup in it than if you have something that cost you $100 million. Let's take another one here called Paxil. P-A-X-I-L. P-A-X-I-L. The price on it is $220.27. So consumer price, $220.27. The cost is $7.60. So the percent of markup is down below 3,000%. It's 2,898%. See that? 2,898%. So here's 2,000%, 4,000%, 8,000%, you know, 30,000%, 21,000%. All of that is well below the profit margin in corn. One kernel of corn produces 87,200% return. So God, you know, years ago, came up with a god-awful percent of profit return on corn. Now, the same thing is true with sunflowers and wheat, beans, you know, anything that you're out there planting, you get a return on it. And that return is your profit or your increase. All right, you hang on here. I'm going to give you your mid-course reminder, and then we're going to come back and take a look at some real profits. We've just been tinkering around, but I'm going to show you what kind of real profit there is in drugs. And this is going to give you a good illustration as to why it is we've got aspartame in our soda pop. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about aspartame update. I've covered the subject of aspartame in the past. If you'll go back on our archives, you can pick up some of those programs. What I wanted to do is to give you some additional information here that perhaps you hadn't heard before or isn't contained in our previous dissertations here on aspartame. Remember, aspartame is simply one brand name for artificial sweeteners. There are six of these artificial sweeteners out there. And sucralose is the one with the largest market share. They have about 70%. And then the other five share that 30% market. And I think aspartame has about 20% of the market share. So, you know, 70 and 20 is 90, and then the other four get to share that other 10%. They're relatively minor. But all of these artificial sweeteners have some similarities. They're immensely profitable, and they cause a lot of disease and sickness and symptoms, which we'll talk about a little later. But right now I wanted to give you the numbers on the profitability here. And so far we've seen 8,000, 4,000, 2,000, 3,000, 30,000, 20,000% markup, which is below our threshold, 87,200. Now, God himself created the most profitable business in the world called farming and gave us an 87,000% markup in corn. All right, now, let me show you a markup here in a product called Norvasc, N-O-R-V-A-S-C, 10 milligram, N-O-R-V-A-S-C. Now, the consumer price on 100 tablets of that's $188.29. $188.29. Cost is 14 cents. So it costs 14 cents to make that. So the markup is 134,493%. Got that? Let's run these numbers by you again. Consumer price is $188.29. Write that down. Cost 14 cents to make it. So 188.29 divided by 0.44. It has 1,344 marks on it. If we applied the same markup as we do for Norvasc on a Chevrolet automobile, we would take $5,000. Remember, that's what it costs General Motors to make an automobile. And then we would multiply that times 1,344. It'd be $6,720,000 by comparison to this particular drug. Now notice that this 134,000% markup is about 50% higher than the 87,200% markup that we have in farming. That's a product there that makes a greater profit than God himself. It just goes to show you. So when the CEO of Goldman Sachs said, you know, that we're doing God's work, you know, he's not whistling Dixie there. Let me show you one over here. Another one. This one is called Prozac, P-R-O-Z-A-C, 20 milligrams. This is a pretty popular product. It costs $247.47. That's the consumer price, $247.47. You got that down? All right. The cost of the general active ingredients is 11 cents. 11 cents. So the percent of markup is 224,973%. 224,973%. It's got 2,249 marks on it. Just take $5,000, which is the cost of manufacturing a Chevrolet automobile, FOB Detroit. That's what it costs General Motors to make one. And by the time you get through paying for that sucker, you know, just multiply that times 2,249, and that'll tell you what the what the comparative price would be for a Chevrolet automobile. Now, here's the grand champion on the list that I have here. I'm sure there's some out there that are even more profitable, but the grand champion is Xanax. Xanax, spelled X-A-N-A-X. The consumer price for 100 tablets is $136.79. $136.79 is the consumer price. That's the retail plus 10 price that you normally pay. The cost of the general active ingredients is 0.024. That's about 2.5 cents. And the markup percentage here is 569,958%. The markup percentage, 569,958%. That's called Xanax. All right. Now that's the grand champion. Now there's a number of others, and if you were to get this report, let me see if I can get it back here for you again. See, I got this on 8/30/09, so I've had it here for 6 months. Came from J. Richard Niemela, N-I-E-M-E-L-A, and it's entitled Costco Unbelievable. Now, it may be that Niemela has an archive, and you might be able to get the Costco Unbelievable J. Richard Niemela report. When I got it, it was dated 8/30/2009. So I would presume that it was around that date that he first published that. Now, let's go back here to what we discovered with the NutraSweet people over here, with the saccharin. Notice here that it costs about 1 cent a pound to make it. Now, this 1 cent a pound over here, let's see, there are four reasons for saccharin's continued strong market share. Price. Saccharin is by far the least expensive high-intensity sweetener at about 1 cent a pound. All right. Now, they can sell this stuff for 1 cent a pound, but what does it actually cost to make? Now, there was a story here came out not too long ago, and it dealt with this thing called Sudafed. Sudafed is an over-the-counter drug that you buy. I think it's a cold remedy or cold and flu symptom remedy. Sudafed, and the active ingredients in it are the same that they need to make methamphetamine. So drug makers, that is illegal drug makers, will go into a drugstore and they will buy Sudafed, and then they take it home and they cook it down and they make methamphetamine with it. Now, there was a cartel down in Mexico, and they were buying this active ingredient, whatever it is, I don't know what it is, and they were paying something on the order, if I remember right, $324 a ton for this stuff. $320, buying it by the ton, and shipping it from India to Mexico. And then they would make the methamphetamine and ship it into the United States. Now, people, you know, that are small-time meth labs and so on, and people that are doing this, you know, on their kitchen stoves and stuff like that, they have to go into the local drugstore and pay full-bore retail for this Sudafed, and then take it home and open it up and then beat it up and cook it down and to make the methamphetamine, and then they sell it on the street and they make profit. So here they are paying full-bore retail, you know, $4 or $5, you know, for this Sudafed to make the methamphetamine that they sell and make scads of profit on. I don't know what the profit is, but it's got to be good to take that kind of risk, doesn't it? So here's the cartel in Mexico. They said, well, why do we want to go around and buy 10 or 15 packages of Sudafed when we can just buy a ton or two or five tons directly from India? Now, that's what the drug companies do. See, here in this country, it costs more money to hire Americans to work, you know, at $10, $15, $20, $30 an hour. So the drug manufacturer here in the state says, well, why do I want to hire an American for $20 an hour when I can buy these active ingredients from India so cheap? So they don't even make the stuff here in this country. So if you're looking at this aspartame and asking the question, is there some big factory employing Americans making this aspartame over here, I would be surprised. The Monsanto company is buying this aspartame, the chemical ingredients for it, from India, Ceylon, the Philippines, Taiwan, China, Japan. Somebody overseas is making this, probably China, India. And then they bring it over here to the States. Now, do they even need to do that? Why bring it to the States and pay $20 an hour to have this stuff packaged? Why not just do that in India as well? You got the same slave labor. And then just import the finished product ready to sell on the shelf. And I was reading a little piece in the paper here talking about Apple computers. You know, you want to buy an American brand Apple computer. Well, the Apple Computer Company has factories in at least six countries overseas. Let's see if I can remember them now. They've got factories in China, Taiwan, Philippines. That's three. And I think India, if I remember right. And the complaint in the paper that they were exploiting their workers. You see, they've got people that are underage working in these factories, and they ain't paying a minimum wage. And that isn't minimum wage here in the States, you know, $7 an hour. It's minimum wage in China, which, as I recall, was 800 won, or about 71 pounds, which would be around $100 a month. Minimum wage in China is about $100 a month. And they're not even paying that minimum wage. And so here's Apple Computer. Now, I'm not railing against Apple. Don't get me wrong. I'm just pointing out that the newspaper and civil rights organizations and human rights organizations are down on Apple because they're buying their products from these factories overseas that aren't paying minimum wage. I mean, they're not concerned about Americans' jobs. Why is Apple doing business in China, Taiwan, the Philippines, and India? How come they're not making their products here in the United States? Well, because we've got this free trade program. See, we Americans bought into this free trade thing. And so by doing that, Apple, if they had to pay $20 an hour, or Dell or anybody else here in the States, you know, that's much more expensive than hiring somebody in the Philippines at $9 a day or something on that order to do the same work. And so now they just bring the computer in here from overseas. They might do research and development here. They might use Americans to figure out, you know, how to build this Dell computer, but they're not going to pay Americans $10, $15, $20 an hour to make them here when they can pay, you know, $100 a month, you know, over in China. All right, now the drug companies are doing the same thing, only their products and their profits aren't, you know, 500 or 5 marks or 10 marks. If the Dell people are getting 5 or 10 marks in their computers, they're making money hand over fist. These people here that are bringing in this this aspartame or saccharin, and their cost, they're selling it for a penny a pound so that Coca-Cola gets the difference between a penny a pound and 45 cents a pound. And so the Coca-Cola company has got about 45 marks in it. So you can rest assured that the cost of producing this stuff overseas by the ton, you know, we're talking about dollars per ton. So we're talking about cents per pound, you know, we're talking about millicents per ounce. And when you're selling pills, you know, we're selling 10 milligrams. You know, did you get these numbers here, boys and girls? I mean, we're not talking about selling pounds and ounces over here. When these pills are being sold to you, they're being sold by milligrams. So they're paying a few pennies a pound for it, and then they're selling it to you for dollars per milligram, for crying out loud. Can you see these astronomical profits that are involved here? Now, I'm not opposed to making profits. Hell, I'm not even opposed to these people making these fantastic profits. But the product that they're selling is killing people. Literally killing people. Now, the estimates are that aspartame kills about 100,000 Americans a year. 100,000 a year. Dying from aspartame poisoning. In the next program, I'm going to take a look at the symptoms and the numbers that go along with these symptoms and show you that, hey, listen, this stuff, you know, it's the perfect crime is what it is, because they went out and they got this stuff licensed and it's legal. There's nothing illegal about selling this aspartame. Nothing. It's a legal product. Now, the FDA has accepted Monsanto and the other industries' examinations of it. In other words, Monsanto goes out, they create a corporation of their own, they say, test this product and see if it causes cancer in lab rats and so on, and they do that. And then they submit their own reports, their own findings to the FDA, and the FDA accepts their findings. I wish I had a deal like that. I would like to open my own company and examine my law school and then report my findings to the government and tell them how wonderful my school is and then have them license me. I mean, can you see how stupid that is? Now, they won't let you and I do that, but they let Monsanto do that. I'll leave it to you. If you think that's the right thing to do, you know, well, get after it. Hell, I'm not here to argue with it, and I'm not even here to change it. I avoid these artificial sweeteners like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now, that's just my own personal choice. Now, I'm not wearing glasses, and I don't have a hearing aid, and I'm an old man, but I'm still functioning pretty well yet. And I attribute that to lifestyle. I'm avoiding all the poisons I can. You know, if I see a poison somewhere like MSG, I don't eat there. When I go into a Chinese restaurant, I always ask them, how much MSG do you have in your soup? And when the guy says, oh, yeah, we use MSG. Oh, good. Thank you very much. And then I avoid that place. I walk out and I go to some other place. We got a couple of Chinese restaurants here in Springfield that use no MSG. And that's good because that's where I eat. When I go to town, I want to go to a restaurant, you know, I want to go to the one without the poison in the food. Now, the MSG in the food makes it really taste good, and I don't deny that. If you want bland glop, then leave the MSG out. And if you want really tasty food, you put the MSG in there. Now, if you want to live to be 90, or you want to die at age 37 from coronary, that's your choice in life. You know, get after it. Now, I don't know what the exact price per pound is, but notice here that it's per pound. My guess would be that these artificial sweetener companies are buying this chemical and manufacturing the product in China or Taiwan or someplace, and they're probably paying, if they're selling it for a penny a pound, to leave 45 marks in it for Coca-Cola. They must be making 100, 200, or 500 marks themselves, and so that means they're probably paying $5 or $10 a ton for the active ingredients for this stuff. You know, buying it by the ton and selling it by the pound. So it's good business, and you can understand the soda pop industry. If they had their druthers, they would sell every single can of soda pop made with artificial sweetener. They would not buy sugar at all, period. I wouldn't, would you? I mean, if you could sweeten your can with one penny a pound artificial sweetener versus 45 cent a pound, you know, it's just that a lot of people don't want it. And so about one-third of soda pop is sold with artificial sweetener, and two-thirds is sold with sugar. It all sells for the same price. So, not only are they getting the same price for it, but the more of this artificially sweetened stuff that they sell, the better it is for them. Let's take a look at some other industry over here. Let's take Kraft Foods or any, you know, Nabisco, whatever. And you've got to sweeten your cookies. And it costs you 45 cents a pound to buy sugar to sweeten your cookies. It costs you a penny a pound to buy aspartame. Well, what would you buy? And then if you put the word light on the package, oh my God, people flock to it. Hey, this is light. It doesn't have sugar in it. People think sugar is bad for them. They're correct. People have been taught that sugar is bad for you. That's right. White refined sugar. I call it white death. White death is bad for you. But the artificial sweetener is worse. The artificial sweetener is worse than the white death. White death is bad, and you've now changed that. You jumped out of the fire, or jumped out of the pan, and now you're in the fire. Now, this aspartame causes harm to your brain, side effects, and safety. So direct and indirect cellular effects of aspartame on the brain. There's a study done in 2008, Humphreys P., Pretorius E., Nod H., Department of Anatomy, University of Pretoria, South Africa. The use of the artificial sweetener aspartame has long been contemplated and studied by various researchers, and people are concerned about its negative effects. Aspartame is composed of phenylalanine, aspartic acid, and methanol. Phenylalanine plays an important role in neurotransmitter regulation, whereas aspartic acid is also thought to play a role as an excitatory neurotransmitter in the central nervous system. Glutamate, asparagines, and glutamine are formed from their precursor aspartic acid. Methanol, which forms 10% of the broken down product, is converted in the body to formate, which can either be excreted or can give rise to formaldehyde, dicatopapyrazine, a carcinogen, and a number of other highly toxic derivatives. Previously, it has been reported that consumption of aspartame could cause neurological and behavioral disturbances in sensitive individuals. Headaches, insomnia, and seizures are also some of the neurological effects that have been encountered, and these may be accredited to changes in regional brain concentrations, which include norepinephrine and a couple other names here that dopamine, I can pronounce that one. The aim of this study was to discuss the direct and indirect cellular effects of aspartame on the brain. And we propose that excessive aspartame ingestion might be involved in the pathogenesis of certain mental disorders and also in compromised learning and emotional functioning. So that gives you kind of an introduction to what we'll talk about next time, which is the 92 side effects that we receive from aspartame or other artificial sweeteners. That'll be next time here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. All right, let me give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. And all of that can be accessed to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, I'm out of time. We got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody.